With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, my name's Stuart Miles, and welcome to the Pocketnet Podcast. It's Microsoft's turn to shine this week as the company announced a stack of new Surface devices, including an update to its dual-screen Surface Duo phone and the introduction of a completely new Surface Studio device. Pocketnet's Cam Bunton was following all the news coming out of the event and joins me to tell us all the details. Meanwhile, earlier in the summer, I caught up with the CEO of Polar to talk all things smartwatches and fitness sensors and how the company is making sure it's still serving needs of its customers without making things too complicated. And finally, Pocketlint's Britta O'Boyle joins me to discuss how we've both been getting on with the new iPhone. Britt's been reviewing the iPhone 13 and 13 mini while I've been using the Pro models. Are those new cameras and features all they claim to be? Well, stay tuned to find out. But first, back to you, Cam. What did Microsoft announce?
They announced quite a few different things. It was basically a chance for them to showcase all their new Surface branded products because, of course, Windows 11 is coming out very soon. Mm. And so it wants hardware to be showcasing that new software, essentially.
And so we've got a couple of new tablets.
Yeah, a couple of new 2-in-1s. So there's the Surface Pro 8, which is sort of like a big spec bump over its sort of flagship 2-in-1. If you remember back in the day, the Surface Pro was arguably the first 2-in-1 laptop tablet that was a proper PC as well as being a proper tablet.
Yeah.
This newest one has got the latest craze, which is 120 hertz refresh rate display and Dolby Vision support. So you've got this beautiful high definition HDR capable display that's fluid and smooth, which is great for writing with the pen and for watching movies and gaming on.
And then you've got the, so that's the 8, isn't it? The Surface 8.
And then
we've got the Go 3.
So, yeah, the Go 3 is a bit of more of a minor spec bump. They've put a new processor inside it. So there's the 10th generation Intel processor in there. It still only costs about $400. But everything else is pretty much the same apart from the software, which again is the new Windows 11 operating system.
Now, we also had an update to the Duo.
We did. And it's interesting because when the first Duo came out last year, it was something of an unconventional launch. It was like, this is a concept device, and a few influencers and journalists in the States got their hands on them and weren't allowed to talk about the software at the beginning because obviously the software was terrible. Mm. It just felt like a slightly unfinished product, whereas the Duo 2 takes that concept and seems to make it a bit more practical and a bit better. So it's got a really powerful processor inside it, but it actually has cameras on it this time. So you can take photos with your zoom and your ultra wide and your regular camera like a normal smartphone.
Now, as someone that's been using the Samsung Flip and Fold, yes, how do you think this fares? Because this is not, and let's be clear about this, this is a folding smartphone, but it's not a folding screen, is it? It's not one screen, it's two screens.
Yeah, exactly. It's a slightly different approach from Microsoft. So Samsung uses one single panel and it bends in the middle, whereas this has two screens that sort of open up to form one surface, but then that means it's got a bit of a gap in between them. But the idea is that the software is supposed to work well between the two panels, so you can have full screen apps, or you can have multi split screen apps, or if you're playing games, you can have a controller on one side and a game on the other side. So a bit like a sort of Nintendo 3DS type approach. It's definitely interesting. Whether or not it's good, or whether or not people are gonna want to buy them is another thing entirely. But I'm definitely intrigued by the concept of the device.
Now, perhaps one of the big surprises for me when I was watching the event last night was this Surface Studio device, partly because Panos, when he got so excited, he had to go off camera and steal one that happened to be lying next to someone ready to go with perfect lighting.
That was quite a funny moment, wasn't it? It was like it was supposed to look off the cuff, but completely scripted and planned. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because they had, I'm sure they had a desktop that was called the Surface Studio a few years ago. And then they've basically turned that into a laptop. So they've got this screen that comes out on a hinge over the keyboard. So you can use it at an angle, like a touchpad or a drawing pad. But then it's also a laptop, but it's also incredibly powerful. It's got the latest NVIDIA graphics chips in there. So it's going to be really, really good for creators. So people who do lots of photography editing or video editing, it just seems like it's geared towards that market of people.
And did we get any idea? Was this all just like, look at this, isn't it amazing? We can't tell you when it's coming out. Or did we get some idea of launch dates?
Yeah, I think most of the products are going to launch at some point in October. Most of them are actually available for pre-order now, and they'll be launching when Windows 11 comes out at the beginning of October. I think the Surface Duo phone will be slightly later on the 20th of October, but that, again, it's available for pre-order now.
Still to come, Britt and I talk about how we've been getting on with the new iPhone 13 range. But first, we partnered with Philips Fidelio on why you should get the company's latest T1 TWS headphones. Apocalypse Rick Henderson is here to tell us three things he's looking forward to with the new product. So Rick, what's your first thing?
Well, number one is audio quality. The Philips Fidelio T1 TWS earbuds are very much in a standard of their own for audio files, basically. They have 10mm dynamic drivers in each ear and LDAC support and Bluetooth 5.2. That means that high-res audio can be streamed to them very easily indeed.
Cool. And your second?
Battery life. The one thing that everybody wonders about in-ear earbuds is how long they will last, and the T1s promise some incredible battery life. They're active noise cancelling headphones, and they promise that with ANC switched on, they will last 9 hours out of the case, and then there's a further 25 hours worth of battery charge in the case itself. That's a mammoth 34 hours.
And number three.
They're designed for a great fit. They're made with Muirhead leather on the case and that real Fidelio standard of brushed metal on the actual earbuds themselves. But also you get ear tips that are both silicone and comply foam. So they fit perfectly. So not only do you get the ANC ability, you also get hybrid noise cancellation through passive noise cancellation thanks to the great fit.
And for more on the new Philips Fidelio T1 TWS headphones and the chance to win a pair of Philips Fidelio L3 headphones, go to pocket-lint.com/Philips. Polar has been making heart rate monitors for decades and more recently has moved into the fitness tracker space, having success with devices like the Polar Vantage and Ignite ranges. But with more and more of us wearing smartwatches and companies like Apple, Garmin and Fitbit keen to get in on the action, how does the company stay relevant? Sander Waring is the newly appointed CEO of Polar and, having worked within the company for the last 15 years, is keen to see it continue to succeed. I caught up with Sander earlier this summer and started by asking him what we can expect from him now that he's in charge.
I'm new to the role and I'm really passionate about the Polar brand. And my role is to lead our, let's say, next chapter in the wearable health and fitness innovation. And I will focus strongly on our, let's say, unique DNA and heritage of the Polar brand.
And you talk about the next chapter. How do you see that? What do you see that being?
The next chapter for us will be that we keep focusing on our muscle, our research-based features, what we call smart coaching, with a strong belief that as a brand, we are able to let people reach their potential with help of our products and working with Polar.
Now, a lot of a lot of people have switched to using an Apple Watch, for example, and that's their kind of first foray, or even the Fitbit, it's their first foray into kind of tracking their performance and their you know, exercise and things like that. Has that dumbed the market down, or has it allowed you to, you know, to open it up to more opportunities for you as Polar?
It opens up more opportunities for us as Polar, and specifically also related to the pandemic we have faced so far. So finally, the whole awareness of using wearables and what you can get out of a wearable is much stronger than it has ever been before. And this is something we consider to be a huge opportunity also for the Polar brand.
And obviously Polar's been doing this for a number of years, way before the Apple Watch was invented, way before Fitbit was a thing. What do you think that Polar does different to make it stand out from everybody else?
We had a long journey. We started in 1977 when heart rate monitoring was not available yet. So we brought the first heart rate monitor at that stage of time, basically laid the foundation for this industry. And as from that moment, we started with first educating what the use of and the need of heart rate monitoring is and what the benefits are. And then gradually we grew up together with our customers to where we are today. And the foundation of any decision we made so far and any feature we brought out is a thorough research base. So we have a thorough research department constantly looking at innovation to help people to meet their goals. And especially, I think this last one, so focusing on the solution of helping people to reach their potential for whatever purpose, from people who decide to be active to the pro sports athletes, that's something which makes us, I think, unique in the wearable space.
And how has that changed over the years? You know, that's a long time to be offering this sort of technology to people. What are the demands that were perhaps when you started, you know, back in the late 70s to now in the 2020s? Mm-hmm. You know, what are people asking for now that they perhaps didn't realize they could ask for like 20 years ago?
We are basically looping back to where it all started, I would say. So people nowadays are looking for a solution. They are more aware of the need to be healthy than they have ever been before. But on top of that, the experience with data is also stronger. So finally, the data a consumer or a customer shares with a brand has a certain value. And nowadays, it's important also for companies like Polar to make sure that we at least match the same value of data back to our customers. And in our case, we call that actionable guidance. But finally, there is a revival of heart rate monitoring also where we started. So I think we are basically coming back to where we all started about 40 years ago. And the momentum it's not away. The only thing that has changed is basically the form factor and the technology.
And that's one of the things, isn't it, that smartwatches have become more and more sophisticated. You know, we're seeing more and more sensors being thrown into different watches, whether it's from Polar or Garmin or Apple or others. How do you think there'll come a point where you just think there's not many more sensors we can put in this? You know, it's do the sensors get better, or, you know, where do you go next with it to still keep that drive and innovation carrying on?
That's basically what you would like to try to get out of this sensor. That's basically the value of the wearable. So finally, there are, as you know, a lot of wearables around in the market. But in the end, it is all about what you get from it and if you really get results from it. So finally, the focus of a company like Polar will stay in innovation and research on getting these sensors more accurate, and also probably make these sensors measure much more values than they do today. So finally, the measurement device is important. But again, the form factor, if it's a smartwatch or an app or anything else, that's basically not the leading principle for innovation.
And that's another problem that we seem to be experiencing within the industry at the moment, is that, you know, devices are coming down in price, and therefore the quality of the sensors are probably not as great as some in other markets and other sectors. How do you educate and explain to consumers that, you know, a £15, you know, watch strap thing that will supposedly give you a heart rate monitor, you know, in it isn't anywhere near as good as something that you guys make?
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why we developed our feature set into this smart coaching principle. So basically, we branded our features and called it smart coaching. And this, let's say, the smart coaching makes that we can easily explain difficult scientific data and translate it to a customer into a simple, actionable data. So finally, it is about making people aware of the fact that, one, if you spend time exercising with a brand or a product, let's make sure that it counts. So make sure that you do not undertrain, basically wasting your time, or do not overtrain, basically losing time because you get injured. And finally, this, I would say that this benefit of training, this is something we are trying to bring forward all the time. And this should be the real reason for people to, let's say, measure activity and finally try to match your objectives and goals.
And how do you, how are you going, can you give us an example about how you're going about doing that? What do you think the key measurement for people is that makes it easy to understand? Because a lot of time, you know, people talk about this quantified self, they talk about, you know, data almost for data's sake. And you kind of, you know, anybody that's worked in numbers, you suddenly look at a spreadsheet, you can get very overwhelmed by data if you don't know what data to look at. How do you go about helping people do that?
Yeah, that's finally where we fused the data. So in the past, you had all the separate measurements like a heart rate, like sleep, training load and recovery. They were all basically independent features you had to use in your device and you had to do your interpretation. Nowadays, with this, let's say, more daily wearability of wearables and also the length of battery lifetime and fashion, of course, also we add to the design of our products, you get a real seamless experience. So basically, we translate all these factors like heart rate variability, sleep, recovery. We translate it into one value. So in our case, for example, with nightly recharge, you will see how much you have recovered during the night. With a FitSpark, we will easily explain you what kind of healthy choices you can make today. And if you would like to know more, even we will even guide you to some kind of exercises where you can see how you need to do it mechanically. But the core of what we are doing here is to stay away from the difficulty and basically translate it into one actionable feature. And if you only use this one, you are probably going to improve a lot already.
Now, a lot of companies within the sector are having to, you know, do what you're doing, which is focusing on the training and all the other stuff. But they're also having to kind of, people want more from their devices and they're expecting it to be, you know, to let them read their messages, to pay for things, to get on transport systems and stuff like that. How important is that to you? Or do you still believe that really this is a watch for exercise, for training? And, you know, if you want to tell the time or do other things, that, you know, really this is a different experience somewhere down the line.
Yeah, it is important, and we listen to our customers, and we have added smart features also to our watches. For the understanding of the decisions we make, we call this basically the triangle drama in our company. So we always have to make the choice between, one, accuracy, and we can proudly say that we are the most accurate and also own the golden standard when it comes down to heart rate and heart rate variability. It's then the second factor is the battery lifetime, because the demand from the customer on the length of the battery lifetime, it's one of the, let's say, key decision-making factors for our customers. And then it comes down to the form factor. So to what extent do we allow a product to have a certain size, or is a certain size accepted by our customers? So this triangle drama, let's say it like that, that's basically leading for the decisions we make. And within this triangle, if we can add things, we will, of course, do it.
And do you think, I mean, you obviously dabbled with Android Wear in the past. Google is now trying to double down after its Fitbit acquisition to kind of create Wear OS and really push that forward, obviously joining forces with Samsung more recently. Is that something you think you'd investigate, you know, once again, or are you very happy with, you know, developing your own OS and sticking with that because you know that you can, you know, close the loop and you've got all the benefits from that?
But there are two choices we can make here. One choice is the data integrity and the fact that we own this end-to-end ecosystem, let's say, assuring that the data we generate is accurate. So that's one reason to have our own ecosystem as being Polar. On the other hand, we are heavily investing in SDK and API, making our product, but also our data, compatible to third-party devices, which could be, let's say, for some customers, the reason to blend the Polar data and output with their desired device from a third party or another brand. So this is the way where we basically place both on the iOS and Google platform and on our own platform.
As the leaves start to fall from the trees and the weather gets colder, the latest iPhones are here once again. Yes, this year we've got four new models, a smattering of new tech features, and a basket of buzzwords and enhancements. But should you worry about missing out, or can these just be missed out? Apocalypse Brito Boyle and I have been reviewing the new iPhones, all four of them, to find out whether things like photography styles or cinematic mode make a difference. And whether you really can notice that new notch and, well, whether you should be heading to the shops to upgrade today. So let's start, Britta, with your opinions on these things. What's your favourite bit of the new phones you've been playing with?
Well, there's quite a few nice bits, but I do like the photographic styles feature in the camera. I think they're quite cool. They're very subtle, but they do make quite a nice difference too.
Yeah, and I've noticed that as well. So just to clarify, I've been reviewing the iPhone 13 Pro and iPhone 13 Pro Max. You've been playing with the 13 and 13 Mini.
Yep.
And photographic styles, for those, there's a new feature, isn't it? So what's, just for those that don't understand what that is or are aware of it, what is it?
So it's a feature that you apply before you take the shot. That's quite important because you can't do it afterwards, which is a little bit of a shame, but it is what it is. So it's like a filter, but it's not really a filter because it's in the image pipeline as opposed to applied to the whole image. So it can understand the different elements of a photo. So it will understand skin tone and then the sky, for example. So it won't apply the sort of film to the sky or the skin tone, keeping it a little bit more natural, but it will still add a little bit of something to it.
And so if you like them, there's four to choose from. So I think it's rich, yeah, contrast, vibrant, cool and warm. Have you found yourself choosing one over the other?
Yes, I like the rich contrast one, but yes,
I like that one as well. Yeah. I thought that kind of just, it kind of punched up the blacks for
me. Gave it a little bit more pop, I thought.
There we go. The official term from now on.
and you can adjust it slightly at the bottom as well. And I think it will stay there until, so the next time you then go into that, it will stay rather than you having to adjust it again. But you can't save it as a preset, which is a little bit strange. But
Now, that's a very specific feature. And I got you to dive straight into that because I was curious of what your favorite bit was. I think that's one of my favorites. I also like the macro photography mode on the iPhone 13 Pro. So that allows you to get really close up. There's a picture on the site as part of my review of a £10 note where I didn't realize there was writing in that part of the £10 note until I used this macro mode. But let's rewind slightly. Let's pull it back out there. The phones that you've been playing with, are they any good? Is Apple, you know, it's always the worry, isn't it? It was incremental upgrades, refinements and stuff, but is it enough to get excited about?
I think it's enough to get excited about, but probably if you're an 11 or a 10R user, more so than if you're a 12 user currently. Because if you were upgrading from an older model, you then get the design change as well. Whereas if you're upgrading from the 12, you don't get that. It's the same, except for that notch being slightly smaller and the camera lenses being slightly larger on the back. So I would say there are some good upgrades. I did actually find that they were faster and the battery life was better in my experience. But yes, I think if you're a 12 user that you could probably skip this one and wait and see what next year brings. But if you're an 11 or 10R user, then yeah, why not?
Yeah, and I think that was some of the criticism, isn't it, from some of the reviewers across, you know, some of the tech reviewers have already got their phones. And certainly I found it as well to a point, is you could easily see this as a 12S.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, there's a few changes. There's a cinematic mode, which I tried to have a go with, and it's kind of hit and miss. I can see where it's going, and I think it's, you know, really clever. So cinematic mode is this idea that it's a bit like portrait mode on an iPhone, if you've used that, but applied to video. And not only applied to the background, but also applied to the foreground to really give you some sort of, to try and emulate the depth of field and bokeh effect that you'd normally get with a traditional DSLR or a traditional movie camera. Obviously, because it's all software-based and it's done on algorithms and things like that, and they've kind of wonderfully said that they studied the cinematographer to determine how impressive this would be. It gets it right, but it can get very confused, and then you still sort of get that weird blurring around, like wispy hair and things like that, which then just kind of, luckily, unlike photography styles, you can edit that after the fact. But even the editing process within that is fairly fiddly and quite complex, and I'm just not sure, certainly on the 13 and 13 mini, whether the kind of person that would buy that would even think about using this kind of stuff.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's there, but ultimately, I mean, how much are you really going to use that unless you're someone that's really keen on getting sort of the arty shot or the arty video? It's a cool feature, needs a lot of light, I noticed when I was testing, but it's a cool feature. And I think you can make it as simple or as complicated as you want to, which I think is quite nice, because then you can have a little play without having to go too mental.
Two down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. and then kind of see what it's about. And then maybe as you sort of get more confident, you can make it into something a little bit more exciting. But you also need to be videoing people that are going to sort of do play ball, if you say sort of wait or whatever, rather than I'm not sure it will really work on your kids type thing.
Yeah, I tried it. I went over the top. I went to a village fete at the weekend, and I tried it on. There was a tug of war competition, and I said, "Oh, let's see what cinematic mode can do with the 10 women that are in front of me and this camera that are trying to, you know, ill heave ho to get to win the tug of war," and just all the like the algorithms going like, "Which one do I focus on? There's too many faces." It's, you know, I was being a bit mean to it.
Testing it to its limits. It picks up objects, pets, and people, doesn't it? That's what
yes.
The idea is, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought what I did think was quite clever is, you know, if the subject you're looking at then gazes away and stops looking at the camera, then it tries to work out where it's gazing to and then goes off. If that's another person, it goes off and finds it there. It's good. It's clever. I think it's obviously, you know, showcases the new A15 processor that's in these devices.
Yeah.
But I don't think Hollywood's going to have to worry just yet.
What was your favourite feature then?
I think I quite like, as you say, I quite like the photography styles. I can see that does make a difference in, you know, it's the. I love a good Instagram filter when there's one around, but it does it does kind of come in and bludgeon with a very blunt baseball bat anything within that picture to fit into that style. It's like putting tracing paper over it, or, you know, just everything is going to be, it doesn't take into account anything in the picture. It just says this is going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
And so the idea of doing that, you know, just at the kind of, at the core level of the photo, so to speak, as it's being taken, is quite nice. I found that the notch is smaller, it's narrow, isn't it, but it's taller.
Yeah.
I don't see, it doesn't really make any difference to me.
No, it doesn't.
I haven't, and I'm quite disappointed that, if I'm being really picky from a design perspective, that Apple hasn't utilized the additional space that's created by that for more, you know, another data point or something. And, yeah, you know, because at the moment, they just, for me, it feels like they've just made the font bigger in that area to fill the new space that's, you know, afforded to it.
I know what you mean. And on the back of the camera housing's bigger. I think it's the same on the Pro models too, I think. But I found that with the mini device, which I love because it's so cute and compact and very light, but the camera housing did look big on the back of that compared to the 12 mini. It just stands out that little bit more, but that's design perspective too. So we're probably being a little bit picky here with our design heads on, I would imagine.
Yeah, but then, you know, I think that's the problem, isn't it? You've got to, Apple has to come up and tell us something that is exciting that we want, even though we didn't think about wanting it, and then has the ability to then convince the entire industry that their phone that doesn't have it is a poorer model because it hasn't got something you didn't think you wanted.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you mean this new Samsung phone doesn't have photography styles, or it doesn't have macro mode, or it doesn't have this? That's outrageous.
I know, right? Well, got macro mode, but you've also got the faster refresh rate on the display, haven't you, compared to the one?
Yeah, and I think that's...
it's again, it's one of those really interesting things. I think the headline for my iPhone 13 Pro review is a lesson in refinement. And it's one of those things where I don't think, unless you look for it, you don't notice that there's this 120 hertz screen that's smoother and, you know, and better for games and things like that. But I think probably after a while of looking at it, if I went back to an 11, I'd be like, oh yeah, it is a bit janky. And it does, you know, it's not as smooth when you're scrolling through the web and things like that. The clearest thing I can sort of reference it to is if you're one of those people where your partner is watching standard definition television or is watching HD TV, and you go, why aren't you watching the HD version or the 4K version of that? And they're like, well, I haven't really noticed. Like, what difference does it make? And you're like, oh my God, this is like black and white notice. Like, why aren't you doing this? And I think it's only when you start looking at it that you kind of realize that there is a change. And it's a welcome change, but it's one of those things. I think if you're happy with your 10 or 11, it's not something necessarily, it's not that one reason to upgrade. But when you do go upgrade, you'll be like, oh yeah, this is slightly nicer.
Yes, like you were saying, though, you don't know what you have until you've got it, right, I suppose?
Yeah, exactly. So, right, final question.
Yeah.
Should you go and get one?
I think that depends on what model you, I think it depends on what model you've got, because I do love them, and especially the 13 mini. It's cute, it's lovely, like the 12 mini was. So yes, I would say yes, but I would say that unless you've got an unlimited budget and you don't care about spending it every year, I would say that if you've got any of the 12 models, that maybe wait on this occasion, because
I think
the refinements are smaller than what you you may not need that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the same. If you've got a 10 or a 10S, or an 11, and you have held out for a while and you think, you know, I've now saved up enough money to get the next upgrade for the next 3 years or whatever, yeah, then you'll find they're amazing. And, yeah, you know, there's so many new things that have introduced. But the incremental updates from, you know, a yearly thing, it feels like it's getting harder and harder to sustain.
Yes, agreed. 100% agree.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.